you know, we have a tendency to stereotype. We have this perception that older adults are fragile and incapable and irrelevant. And this can lead to people feeling ignored. I mean, imagine, like, you know, we are all contributing members of society. You started going about your life,
right,
and then you hit a certain birthday and then you're no longer relevant.
Right.
Which is terrible because people, you know, continue to have a lot of value to add.
My guest this week, Arielle Burstein, began studying aging while at MIT and has continued to do so for the Milken Institute based in Santa Monica. Join us this week as we discuss many different topics as it relates to aging, from ageism in the workplace, social isolation, the economic impact of the aging population, and what's being done to try to ease the impact as more and more people live a longer and sometimes healthier life. I hope you enjoy this episode. If you do, please leave us a comment on iTunes or on Stitcher. All right. So as we always like to do when we start off the episode, do you mind telling the audience something that they might not know about you or a fun fact about yourself?
Sure. A few years ago, I did a grant project in Peru where we built greenhouses sort of like at the foot of the Andes. I guess people don't usually assume I'm that handy, but
yeah,
we did it.
And so what was the scope of the project?
So because the glaciers were melting faster, there wasn't as much water year round in this part of Peru that we were in. And so to try to supplement nutrition, particularly for children, we built greenhouses in a few sites in the Sacred Valley.
Yeah. And how did you get connected to that project? Was it through school or was it like, how did you get involved with that?
It was a grant. It was called Davis Projects for Peace.
Yeah.
And so we won the prize and a friend and I went after college and stayed there for 3 months.
Oh, wow. That. For 3 months.
Yeah.
So it was a full fledged project.
Yeah.
And so how many things did you end up building or like how, what kind of impact did you make?
So we built two structures.
Yeah.
Which took a lot more than I realized. I'd never built anything in my life, maybe a birdhouse.
Yeah.
at most. But you know, we started by sort of clearing the area.
Right.
We put in these like big PVC pipes. I used a pickaxe.
Nice.
Yeah. Which at high altitude.
Yeah. Right.
It's pretty tough.
Have you done more projects like that in the past or have you been back to Peru since then?
I haven't been back to Peru.
Yeah.
I haven't done anything like that since then. I guess it's why it stuck out to me as
right.
kind of an unusual effect.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for sitting down with me today. We do have a lot to cover. I'm excited to go through some of these things. Before we dive in too far though, we're actually sitting here in Santa Monica at the Milken Institute. Mm-hmm. Can you tell the audience a little bit about the Milken Institute and kind of set up, you know, what you do here and what kind of things come out of it, what the mission is for the listeners?
Sure. So we are a nonpartisan nonprofit think tank, and we are undertaking some of the world's biggest challenges. And we do that through convenings, research, and policy work.
Yeah. What does convenings mean? Just like before we move on, what does that mean in a professional sense?
That's a great question. That's sort of our word for events where we get people from all different backgrounds who are experts on a given topic.
Yeah.
To really, you know, dig in and tackle something together.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah. It's a pretty incredible thing to see it happen, to have, you know, heads of state and health experts and, you know, the most important academics in a given field, people from the private sector. We believe that you need to get, you know, business, private and public together to solve these bigger challenges that we're facing.
Yeah. Have you ever been starstruck by someone that you worked with on a convened panel or group?
Oh, that's such a good question. Yeah. I mean, I totally nerd out over, you know, I starting at MIT, I read the research of many aging experts, And then coming here, I got to meet them at these events. Right. And I had them all in the room with me together. And so, yeah, I'm sure that I was.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned MIT, and I do want to kind of get into how you got into this whole area. But before we go on to that, you were also mentioning when we had originally talked that what happens after the research is done. There are certain times that there are also initiatives that are crafted out of that, and then there are certain instances where it's just the research part, and then the initiatives are hopefully taken up by other entities. So can you just explain a little bit more about how that works with the research? What happens after the research is done here?
Right. So, I mean, the research is really the foundation and sort of the beginning of the projects that we're working on and the subjects we've decided to sort of invest in. And from there, we really sort of rally our network and stakeholders. Mm-hmm. And then we usually create a campaign. So I think a good example is our Best Cities for Successful Aging work, where we did a mayor's pledge.
Yeah.
And we got, I think, something over like 150 pledges from mayors. So they're working at the civic level to make aging more successful.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. And so how did you become involved in the research of aging and research behind aging?
So in 2012, I started working at the MIT Age Lab. Mm-hmm. And before that, I wasn't familiar with aging or, yeah, you know, gerontology as a discipline. I was interested in doing more social science research.
Sure.
And I began sort of like as the rookie at the Age Lab, actually dressing up in this suit that we had called the Age Gain Now Empathy System.
Yeah.
So really my first job there was to, you know, help people understand and empathize with some of the conditions of aging.
Right.
And then I graduated to dressing other people up, some students, nice, some reporters in the suit.
Yeah.
So that they could have that experience.
Yeah.
And I continued to work in aging because I think it's been an amazing opportunity to look at these sort of broader trends and understand how they're going to shape really our whole world.
Right.
And to communicate that, you know, to all the different sectors.
Yeah. And so I actually, in doing research for this and reading some of the research that we had talked about, I think that age suit was actually discussed a little bit. For the audience, can you tell them a little bit about what it actually was and what things it was hoping you were hoping to have people realize in using it?
Sure. So it restricted movement. It sort of slowed you down. It showed you what going through day-to-day life, yeah, with different limitations would be like. And, you know, not all of those are inevitable, right?
Right.
That depends on how we treat our bodies and also, sure, partly our genetics. We also had these goggles that showed sort of different types of eye conditions,
sure,
like macular degeneration, for, right, example.
Right.
And then we would have people go through a grocery store and get maybe, you know, the low sodium item.
Right.
Maybe get down like a heavy, like a liter of a soda.
Yeah.
And have that experience. Yeah. And we also successfully helped some businesses redesign layout of stores.
Wow.
It was incredible. They had this real aha moment where they knew what it was like to be one of their older customers, and,
sure,
they recognized that it wasn't a good experience for them.
Right. Was there something that always stood out to people that was like particularly or surprisingly difficult about the suit? Was it the mobility, or was there something else that stood out?
I think once we got, I think we had earplugs in, these goggles on, people's movement was very restricted. You think they were surprised,
yeah,
to find just how constricting that
right,
could be for them. And I think in particular, we had sort of a weighted, something that sort of like weighted your back down. Mm-hmm. And I think that was particularly hard for people,
yeah,
to not be able to understand why older adults can't always look sort of up and around, and,
sure,
why they might be looking, you know, rather like down at their feet when they're walking, maybe crossing the street.
Right. Excellent. Well, we're going to dive into a little bit more about that too. So we'll kind of revisit some of that. As we get into it though, when you and I were talking and in some of the other research, there were some data that just really jumped out to me that I want to throw some data out there for the audience so that they really understand with a frame of where we're coming from. So We've actually discussed on the show multiple times with different people about that 10,000 baby boomers turn retirement age every day through 2030. But there were also some other numbers that stood out, that the population age 65 and up will nearly double from 43, just over 43 million to just over almost 84 million. And in that time frame, the population aged 80 plus is going to quadruple. Also, worldwide, the population aged 60 plus will more than double from 900 million in 2015 to more than 2 billion in 2050, which is, I think, one of the numbers that jumped out at me even the most. Are there some other statistics that the audience should know or that stand out to you along with some of those?
Those are great numbers. Yeah. I use those numbers. And I think that really illustrates what a mega trend this is.
Yeah.
But on top of that, I would add that not only do we have all of these older adults now, but life expectancy is, in fact, also increasing, which right. to me is mind-blowing.
Right.
And I think it's also really relevant for sort of our peers and for other young people to understand.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of the 20th century, life expectancy was 47.
Yeah.
Fast forward to today, it's a baby born could live to 79.
Wow.
By the middle of the century, it'll be up to 88. And then by the end of the century, it will be 100. And wow. So people will ask, you know, I've seen these headlines. Is it true that the kids born now could live to 100, 120? And I think absolutely that's the case. And that much more reason that we need to innovate.
Right.
Because this is really going to change life as we know it.
Right. And I also think some of the something that just as you're saying that number sticks out to me as well is that that's an average age. And so, you know, you have countries where healthcare and living conditions are not anywhere close to, you know, what we are lucky enough to have here in a first world country and with an excellent healthcare system. Well, the healthcare system needs some work, but the healthcare itself. And so in a place like this, you could even say that the life expectancy would be even longer than that to get down to that average. So it's really kind of incredible.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, just because everyone is living longer doesn't mean they're living better. Some
right.
people are going to be living longer and much sicker.
Yeah. And it's a whole new challenge because they haven't been living this long yet. And so resources are stretched anyway. And then you add the life expectancy onto it.
Right.
We actually touched a little bit on the healthcare system. There's a lot of uncertainty and turmoil currently in the politics of our healthcare system and in what the American healthcare system will look like moving forward. What are some of just like the big picture, high level implications of some of this uncertainty or some of the decisions that could be made and how it might affect this aging population moving forward?
So, I mean, health is the foundation of a successful life as we age.
Right.
And I think preventive care in particular.
Yeah.
So a lot of older adults rely, of course, on all of these services and supports. I think to lose any of those would be a huge step backwards.
Yeah.
Definitely a step in the wrong direction.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see how it all works out, especially after we just highlighted the numbers of how many more people there are going to be that need some of those services. And we're in a place like Santa Monica right now where property values are through the roof. And so even the implications of where do you house all of the people? Where do you all of those kinds of social implications as well
right.
are going to have a
Absolutely.
Big impact. We talked a little bit about how the growing aging population will affect the younger generation also. We talked about the aging suit and trying to get them to realize some of the challenges that you just don't think about when it's not a challenge in your day-to-day. What does this challenge of this rapidly growing and ballooning aging population mean for the younger generations?
This is something I think a lot about and how to sort of bridge that gap.
Right.
And to go back to your question about who I was the most starstruck about, I got to meet Baroness Sally Greengross, who's the head of the International Longevity Center. And she said something that really resonated with me, which was that, you know, everyone in the aging field isn't working towards advocating just for one generation.
Yeah.
We are really advocating for all generations.
Yeah.
And to think of this as really a life course issue. I mean, aging starts when we're born,
right?
Right? But when I talk to other people our age, our peers about it, I get a lot of pushback because, you know, we're all trying to make our lives work for today and for tomorrow, not 60 years from now. But I would say that this is relevant to our lives now. And I would pick two big reasons. The first one being, you know, our own longevity.
Sure.
You know, so if we can live into the hundreds, we can have 80-year relationships.
Right.
Probably not something you want to run home and tell your significant other.
Right. It's interesting to think about. I mean, it really changes all of those things that you don't think about on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. And I think in some ways we're kind of already doing this. I mean, this generation has really kind of thrown off the traditional timeline of marriage, of children. We're doing all of that later.
Right.
And so I see us really heading in the right direction. I mean, I think that we should expect to, you know, go to Peru when we're in our 70s and travel around Peru or, you know, hike the Pacific Crest Trail.
Sure.
And I think to set us on that course, we need to think about sort of the choices that we make, the trajectory of our lives starting now.
Yeah. And one other thing that is in the research about some of you said bridging the gap. I really like that between generations. But there's a lot of like research and things that you looked into regarding ageism and how it manifests in different ways. What are some of the main misunderstandings? This kind of goes back to the physical understandings we talked about with the aging suit, but also just not necessarily the physical ones. What are some of the main misconceptions that the younger generation has about either aging or the older generation has a generalization?
Right. So, I mean, ageism is discrimination against older adults.
Yeah.
And it's so odd because this is one of the few types of discrimination that we will all face. We will, you know, if we live long lives, we will all eventually be on the other side of.
Sure.
So, you know, hopefully not sounding too corny, but, you know, the golden rule really applies here. My hope is that if we kind of treat others the way we want to be treated and treat older adults now the way we'd like to be treated when we are older, that by the time that we get there, there won't be so much stigma.
Sure.
And I think two of the largest misconceptions are, first of all, you know, we have a tendency to stereotype. We have this perception that older adults are fragile and incapable and irrelevant. And this can lead to people feeling ignored. I mean, imagine, like, you know, we are all contributing members of society. You're started going about your life,
right,
and then you hit a certain birthday and then you're no longer relevant,
right,
which is terrible because people, you know, continue to have a lot of value to add.
Yeah.
And the older population is also incredibly diverse. You know, everyone is unique. Nobody likes to be put in a box. I mean, I cringe every time I read, you know, millennials are this or millennials are that. Our negative self-perceptions have even like a negative our negative self-perceptions have an adverse health effect on us. So it's not just what we're getting externally, it's also amazingly what we believe about ourselves.
Yeah. So taking the research and the thoughts behind it and looking at the reality of it, what are some things that are being done that you've come across to try to bridge that divide between generations or to help a younger generation understand better?
So for my first year at Milken, we worked on purposeful aging, which is really creating more opportunities for older adults to meaningfully give back and you know, really be the part of the fabric of everyday life and not to be on the margins. Mm-hmm. There was a study, 2 out of 3 older adults don't, you know, they want to spend time with people outside their age group.
Right.
That, you know, they want to have that kind of interaction.
Which is, that's a striking number in and of itself, because people, I think you're right, it almost gets put into a box, especially when then you have like assisted living communities or places like that where they're all living together anyway. So 2 out of 3 wanting to interact between generations is a pretty striking number.
Right, exactly. I mean, we live in very age segregated ways, and so we need to intentionally bring people together.
Yeah.
And it does a lot of good for society on the whole. I mean, it's an incredible bolster for health. It fends off heart disease, Alzheimer's. Purpose has real health benefits.
Yeah.
And there's a growing body of research that tells us that. In fact, there was a study that came out just last week from Encore in Stanford where they found older adults had higher personal well-being overall, who are engaged in purposeful activity. So pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah. Does purposeful activity mean work? Well, does it mean volunteering? I know there was also some really incredible data on the amount of financial dollars that the older generation donates and different things like that. What does purposeful aging entail?
That's such a good question. So, you know, it's anything that is making people feel like they're meaningfully contributing.
Yeah.
I am on a committee for the Los Angeles Generation to Generation campaign, mm-hmm. Which is part of Encore. And they're trying to bring older adults 50 plus to work with kids in an early childhood education setting.
Okay.
And they're trying to get millions of volunteers. And that's what we're working towards. And I think that's a good example, because people could either be volunteering their time. They might be doing something like reading with kids. You know, they might be, utilizing a skill that they had in their work lives.
Sure. And to keep on the business and the work side of aging, there's also ageism in the workplace. I think that some of the things that you were talking about earlier, helping consumers realize different things, but then there's on the workforce side. So what are some of the ways that an aging workforce is either one being aged out, or that the idea of ageism or discrimination against that older population comes into play in a professional setting?
Right. So I guess I'll start by saying how I think having more older adults in the workforce is sort of changing day-to-day work.
Sure.
So, I mean, employment sort of operates on a 20, 30-year-old system where people get to a certain age and, you know, they get a nice watch and they leave and they golf, you know, yeah. for the next 30 years.
Sure.
So that is outdated to begin with. We know that older adults are continuing to work either out of necessity,
right.
Or, you know, for continued purpose in their lives. And so now we have more generations than ever before in the workplace, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
But, you know, this creates certain pressures. I've had peers say, you know, we worry that if there are more older adults, then we won't have a chance to succeed and to move up.
Right.
The economics tell us that there's room for everyone. I mean, we experienced this when there were more women entering the workforce.
Sure.
But I think just emotionally, you know, everybody needs to feel valued.
Yeah.
So I think there's a real opportunity for older adults who are remaining in the workforce who have this incredible amount of knowledge,
yeah.
You know, to give back to their younger sort of rising stars. And, you know, that's not just like a coffee date. That's really kind of investing in one another and
sure.
in their goals.
And passing along some of that knowledge that they have accrued over so many years in that professional environment as well. What are some of the things that whether it's companies or different organizations are doing to be more inclusive of the aging population in the workforce, or to try to combat the professional ageism? Are there any specific examples or things that are happening?
Right. And I want to give like two reasons, you know, that older adults really are valuable. I mean,
yeah.
you sort of just mentioned this like knowledge transfer.
Yeah.
They have more positive well-being overall. And we've also found that intergenerational teams are more innovative.
Really?
Yeah, which I think is really neat. And there's sort of more ongoing research there. So I think the way that businesses combat this is to by really examining the outdated ways that we think about aging and work.
Yeah.
And to start by considering age as part of the diversity matrix.
Yeah.
Something like 8% of CEOs have included this in their strategy, which is much, much too low.
Yeah.
So it needs to start with hiring practices, to bring older workers in. There was a study at UC Irvine, and I think it was Tulane, and they sent out thousands of resumes, and they found that older adults got callbacks much less often, and older women in particular. So I would say that's the place that they need to start.
Yeah, and it seems too that with technology becoming more and more of a factor in the workplace and just in life in general, the possibility would be there to phase out some of the older generation that's not as technology savvy and able to utilize those as they change. What are some of the ways that an older generation is becoming tech savvy, and do you see that is something that is picking up, or is it kind of does it kind of fall along the stigma of, oh, you know, that's change, I don't need it, I have, you know, my way, I've done it forever. How is that playing out?
Yeah, so that's a great point. I think that businesses also need to provide training to help bridge that technology gap.
Right.
And I also think that older workers need to meet them halfway and be willing and open to learn.
Right.
A lot of people are surprised to find that older adults are actually very tech savvy. Their adoption rate is actually surpassing the rate of the rest of the population.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I even find too that I'll be honest, and you know, I'm a young person, but even sometimes I can't keep up with some of the technology that is happening. So I think it's also just the pace at which things are changing. But hopefully, that's not something that adds to the phasing out of those older workers.
Yeah. I remember going on Snapchat for the first time and being like, I don't get it.
I don't get it.
Yeah. What am I not getting?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't quite understand it either.
It's everybody.
Yeah.
It's everybody.
Looking at not just the workforce, but looking at the actual business of aging, what are some of the business opportunities or new companies that are not taking advantage, that's the wrong word, but, you know, taking advantage of this growing population of an aging, you know, workforce or just aging people and how much it's growing? Are there any companies that stand out or that have popped up or been created, or companies that have shifted towards actually taking advantage of the business possibilities of this aging population?
I think framing it as an opportunity is totally right on. And I am starting to see some momentum. And I do think that the businesses that don't recognize this will be behind the curve. I mean, they will be doing themselves and their stakeholders really a disservice. Older adults have the most assets and they spend the most money.
Right.
And yet businesses and advertisers in particular are very much focused on youth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if the longevity economy were a market, you know, this is all the goods and services purchased by older adults, were a country, it would have a GDP of $7.1 trillion.
Wow.
So, I mean, they would be missing out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to reinforce your point on a huge opportunity.
Yeah. There are so many creative ways that people are starting to look at it too. Everything from, you know, we talked a little bit about residential living, because where is everybody going to live as there are more and more people and as things get more expensive, to different technologies that are focused on aging. So I think it will be an interesting next couple of years with some of those advancements. Along those lines, we talked about the uptake of technology by an older generation, but what are some of the ways that technology is actually shaping the way that people age, not necessarily as a worker, but as they age? What are some of the ways that technology is really impacting that?
I think that people are getting more connected, which is really exciting. We gave my grand— I'll just use a personal story to illustrate this. We gave my grandmother an iPad. She's in her 90s, and you know, half the family was kind of skeptical, but we kept sort of you know, pushing her to try to use it. And she had a desktop, and she was FaceTiming after a few weeks. She was sending photos.
Right.
She texts now.
Yeah.
And her iPad crashed. I don't remember what happened, and she ended up back on her old desktop. And she called me, and she said, I can't use this thing anymore. It's like a dinosaur.
Well, even you and I originally met. You— first of all, you mentioned the International Longevity Fund, or what was the International Longevity Organization that you had mentioned?
Oh, the International Longevity Center.
Yeah. And then we met at like a social isolation committee meeting originally.
Yeah.
Is technology making a significant impact on— because that's a huge epidemic too, that I think people don't realize is such an epidemic. Some of the statistics on the effects it can have on health to be isolated and alone as you age are incredible. They're really striking. is technology having a positive impact on being able to connect people back into that and combat some of that isolation?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up because it seems like one of the more under the radar tech issues.
Yeah.
I think that it will help bring people together. I think it has the potential to make people feel more included, which is very exciting. And then I see things like, you know, smart homes and Internet of Things, you know, sort of progressing in the home to keep people healthy and connected there.
Right.
You know, if our goal is to keep people aging in place, which seems to be what they want to do, what they care about the most.
Yeah.
That will allow them to live independently, but also, you know, have enough social interaction to sort of bolster them.
Yeah. This is just kind of a off the top of my head question here, but obviously the health, managing the health of this ballooning aging population, we said some of the numbers earlier, that's I think kind of front and center in people's minds. How are we going to handle that problem? But right. Then, you know, we talk about isolation as they age being one of the, like, you know, you mentioned it, that people don't think about. It's really under the radar, but it is going to be almost as impactful as how to manage the health of all of those people in general. Are there other impacts of an aging population that people don't think about all the time that really need to be looked at right now while we have the chance to set something up for the future? Are there other things like that that people don't really think about when they look at the opportunities and challenges here?
Oh, that's such a good question. I don't even know what I would pick.
You know, because we talked about with the isolation, that's not something that is at the forefront of people's minds. But I think some of the data that they were throwing out at that meeting we were at, it's like being socially isolated can have the same health effects as smoking like a pack of cigarettes a day.
Right.
And those kinds of things. But people don't talk about that factor of aging. Are there other things that people should be talking about aging that we're not really talking about right now? Maybe that's a better way to phrase the question.
Yeah. And I've found, so like when I'm talking to people, usually they want to know about longevity and sort of like how close we're getting to immortality.
Right.
And then usually I start by talking about this massive older population that we're not prepared for, you know, that we really need sort of the social innovation for that.
Right.
People are surprised to hear that we're not, we're not there yet.
Right.
I hope that, you know, people sort of increasingly understand the urgency of it.
Yeah.
And I would say, like, you know, just for the audience, this isn't just for gerontologists, you know, or people in business. I mean, this is something that everybody can take on, whether it's, you know, because you have a more positive self-perception or sort of external perception of aging. You know, I think a lot about how millennials, you know, now the biggest generation are going to really be leading.
That's a really interesting point too, because the baby boomers are this huge generation. We have all these numbers of the impact of them aging, but I think that's something that people don't also think about. It's not like it's going to go back down to a more manageable number after this generation. If anything, it will be an even larger challenge because more of the older generations will be coexisting as an aging population. Right. But I don't think people really talk about that. They see this baby boomer number and, you know, the amount of people retiring now, and it's like, oh, this is the challenge, when really this is only the start.
My tagline has sort of been longevity changes everything, and I really believe that. I mean, this is something that people will see in their day-to-day lives. It's not just like another stat maybe they read in an interesting article and then they kind of moved on. I mean, this will absolutely be part of our day-to-day. You know, I just thought of a good answer for your sort of what do people not realize question.
Yeah.
Don't you think it's like that people don't really get to a place necessarily where they identify themselves as old?
Yeah.
I know someone with a grandmother who, you know, is in her 90s and doesn't want to be with all the, quote, you know, old people.
Right.
And so we always kind of, we just keep moving that marker ahead, you know, 15, sort of 20 years.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Until all of a sudden you are the older generation to most of the people younger than you, I guess. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. And so like this is kind of the experience that I had with our neighbor, who was a geriatric care manager. Mm-hmm. She's in her 80s and she cares for people in their 90s still. And she's been doing this her whole life. And she was excited to hear about my work. And she said, you know, it's the strangest thing. I have known so much about aging throughout my life. And until it happened, I didn't understand it. I didn't expect this. It's so, right. You know, it's kind of this like Twilight Zone experience for her.
Yeah.
And we were talking a little bit more about it. And she was asking about our work. And she stopped and she said, so what can you do for me? What are you going to do for me?
Yeah.
And yeah, it was this moment where, you know, I know her, I know her sort of day-to-day struggles.
And whether it's, all of a sudden health issues catch up to you, or, you know, you have chronic health issues, or I know a lot of times just in my experience in the senior care industry, a lot of times that kind of realization happens maybe if you don't get your license renewed or, you know, as friends maybe pass away or spouses pass away or those kinds of impacts that you never are expecting. But then all of a sudden it's the reality that you have to deal with. And I do think that that is actually an important thing that people don't think about. Yeah, I'm never the like – elderly population, it's all those older people, you know what I mean? Until it's you all of a sudden. Yeah.
Right. I think most people are managing, you know, one to a few chronic conditions and no one really tells you how to do that.
Right.
And that can be devastating.
Yeah. When you're able to explain something to someone with a story, do you see a difference in the way that people either internalize the information that you're giving them or the way that they react to it, or does it make a difference in the way that they respond moving forward if they can relate it back to something either in their own lives or, you know, a story that sounds like their neighbor or maybe their family member?
Consistently, when we have convenings, you know, we will have CEOs and executives of major companies. Mm-hmm. And a few people always come up to me at the end and they tell me about the caregiving experience they recently had.
Yeah.
Or someone, you know, someone's health in their family. So, you know, even in a business setting, it's, you know, once we sort of share anecdotes, it's resonating with them on a personal level.
Yeah.
And this really does affect everyone.
Everyone. Yeah. Well, actually, you bring up an interesting point, too, when we were discussing about maybe the aging challenges or opportunities that people don't think about enough. One that I'm always trying to make people aware of is the caregiving epidemic, specifically the family caregiving epidemic. And that's another one that people don't plan on or expect to be impacted by until it's time to be at the family caregiver and the implications. I've seen it in my own family when my mom had to take care of my late grandmother when she was sick and she lived there. And but it really is almost the potential to be an epidemic of the health problems that come with not having adequate support as a family caregiver. And so I'm sure you see, do you see that a lot, or do you see the effects of that or some of the challenges of that as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I see it personally, and then I also see it in the numbers. There's this great quote that basically says, you know, at one point in our lives, we are either cared for or we are caregivers.
Yeah.
You know, it's a role that everybody plays. So to not address it in sort of the support system of our society, you know, really is problematic. I mean, family caregivers are spending millions and millions of dollars and hours caring for their loved ones.
Right.
You know, there's no reason that we should value those people as much as someone that's showing up every day from 9 to 5.
Right. Well, and the other thing is a lot of those people are going to their jobs from 9 to 5, and then they have a full-time job of the family caregiving after that as well.
And that's a whole other thing. I think it would be incredibly helpful to have caregiving leave options.
Right.
And, you know, older adults generally are really the ones who are serving as caregivers for other older adults. So, for businesses, I would add that as something that you need to maintain an older workforce.
Yeah,
and flexible time.
Yeah. So again, thank you for sitting down with me today. I really appreciate it. As we wrap up here, if people are interested in reading a little bit more about the research that we've discussed today or on some of the other research initiatives of the Milken Institute, where can they find that information?
Sure. So to go to the Greater Milken Institute website, it's Milken, M-I-L-K-E-N, institute.org.
Okay.
And then the Center for the Future of Aging is aging.milkeninstitute.org.
Excellent. Thanks again for sitting down with me.
Thank you.
All right.
Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care.